So, Pranam to all of you. Welcome one more time to our satsang and a few words to ground ourselves a little bit more, to embrace the spaciousness of the present moment, trying to arrive not only in body, not only in screen, not only in keyboard, not even only in mind, but in all of our faculties and dimensions and the very core of our being, hopefully, so we can. Yeah, gift each other our presence, the fullness of our being. That's a very sacred offering in satsang. Gurave Gaurachandraya Radhikaya Tadalaya Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tad Bhaktaya Namo Namaha. So here we are. One more day, one more week, one more step, one more breath into our ever unfolding journey. So, thank you for joining. And as usual, you are invited to share the mood. And I will say the intention, the necessity of this type of gatherings is also trying to hear each other, right? Like inviting each one of us to share whatever we need to share, and entering into this deep space, not only of sharing, but also of bearing witness to everyone else's sharing, to inhabit presence, to inhabit receiving, giving, but also receiving. And in this mutuality, in this back and forth, in these interactions, learning to love, learning to express affection for one another with the beloved mystery, the sweet absolute in the center. That's a very necessary warming up and training for the eternity that we are already receiving a trailer of right here, right now. So, in order to do so, you're invited to raise your digital hand here in Zoom, or if you have anything you would like to present, to ask about, also via written form, you can send in the Zoom chat, though we may prefer to do it with the raised hand, and we may prefer, if it's possible, for as much as you can, to activate your camera so we can also see each other as much as we can, and give and receive each other as much as we can. So far we have three raised digital hands, but from Vincent first, from Netherlands, then from Badra from New Zealand, then from Rasangi from California, US. So we'll begin with Vincent. So welcome, invited to unmute yourself.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I have a question, which a very short question, which I give a little bit of context. I'm trying not to make it too long. From the time I was I heard words like bhakti and words like the gospel and the good message. I always thought, like, what exactly does that mean? That doesn't mean that I never had experiences with reading, which I at moments I understood a little bit, understanding was there, but I always thought, like, what exactly does it mean? And then today I was talking with an Franciscan monk, and we were having a conversation, and he said at a certain moment, like, sometimes I meet people who are very religious or spiritual, and but I don't see it in the way they act and in the way they he said, like, not like judging, but he said, I personally don't see it. And sometimes I meet people who don't have nothing with religion or with spirituality, and I see them acting in a very loving way, in a very conscious way, and a very surrendered way. And and my question is, and in the context of the words, like, what does it mean, bhakti, and what does it mean, like, God consciousness or something like that? My question Is there something we can find about God consciousness without God, or bhakti without, I don't know, the whole context of bhakti?
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good question, and thank you for framing it with care. In one sense, the answer will be yes and no, and of course, the rest of my answer is to explain what, in which sense yes, in which sense no. Because we are using words, right? Bhakti, God, religion, spirituality. But what do we mean by that? Each person has a different idea of that. I agree with the observation of your Franciscan friend or the Franciscan monk you met, which is by the well cool that you can just walk by and you have a conversation with the Franciscan monk on the way, right? And I agree, and we tend to speak a lot about this, right? Like you can be very religious in the more external sense of the word, but not necessarily spiritual, if we can use spiritual in the more internal sense of, you know, of the words. In other words, one thing is following the rules externally. Another thing is what's happening inside, internally. So I like to make a play of words in English will be correctedness versus connectedness. Right? You can be very correct, but how much do you connect internally? Externally, I may be checking all the boxes and going on ch to church on Sunday or to Sunday feast on Sunday, depending on the tradition. Or doing the daily prayers at the three particular times of the day. Again, be very impeccable in the timing, in the packaging, knowing the verses, knowing what to say to certain questions. But it can be many of that can be from a place of dogma, aligning myself with an official dogma, not necessarily faith, but just belief. It can be more like in that case, it's more limited to something cultural, even social. And there may be many times, again, I'm talking in general, I'm not addressing any specific case, but there can be lots of insecurity behind that. We don't have a very holistic sense of self, so we cling onto these absolutes and ideas, but it from a very external way, and we look very religious, and it's all about impressing and deserving and earning. But then in how we behave on a day-to-day basis, there is a clear disjointment there. And again, in our tradition, we will speak in terms of Kanishta. That's the word. Kanishta in Sanskrit means a neophyte, which we are not condemning that person. It's just someone who behaves in for a certain time in a certain way as long as they remain inside their official holy perimeter, right? They go to church on Sunday, and for the 2 hours of the mass or whatever, they're good boys, good girls. But when they cross the door of the church, they are no longer in the church, according to their experience. So they invoke the bipolar other self, and they start to behave in ways that utterly contradict what they heard and say they did inside the compound, the religious compound. And again, we have to begin somewhere. But ideally, as we progress, we realize temple, the holy, the sacred is not limited to one particular space or perimeter. You ultimately is everywhere. And therefore, I'm invited to behave as I behave in the presence of the divine everywhere. So for me, it's not so much about let's speak about God consciousness without God, because it's an oxymoron, basically, to say that. I mean, God consciousness by definition includes God. Now, if some people who officially align with God consciousness behave in terribly embarrassing ways, then the question is how God conscious they actually are. How much God is involved in that whole thing? How much these people is just using religion unconsciously, again, without any bad intention, but just bypassing another flavor of escapism. And now it's perfectly justified because we have a religious mask. We have a set of absolutes. We have holy scriptures to shield behind, to hide inside. So we don't need to confront all the things that actually any true spiritual path will invite you to confront and to work on and to integrate and to heal and to then play out in the day to day, in the most ordinary moments of your daily life. So many times someone say, okay, I would like to live a life of bhakti, but without God. I wouldn't say, yeah, you can do it. I will say probably and I agree again, there are those who officially, I don't know, belong to a bhakti tradition and they behave in very dysfunctional ways. There is people who do not identify themselves with any spiritual religion, religious institution or tradition even, and they behave, it seems to be, in quite more human, sensitive, balanced ways. And again, here we are not saying who is worse, who is better, because there is so much more to everyone's story and who we are to just label people. But on my personal opinion, because you're asking me, some others of you may differ, but of course, I think there is a point to make in terms of, yeah, we need to be of a balanced mind. That's for me as a preliminary foundation to spirituality, actually, because for most, because if we come to spirituality with a very dysfunctional mind, humanity, psyche, emotional landscape, it's utterly a mess. And we begin spirituality without realizing the mess we are carrying into. We may end up resorting to spirituality for the wrong reasons, just filtering spirituality through that. Now, also, I wouldn't say if you're a perfectly balanced, sattvic human being, that's all. No, that's a perfectly balanced, sattvic human being. But sattva is for us, at least again, I'm talking from a bhakti perspective, sattva is more like a threshold from which you can have a glimpse of Shuddha Sattva or transcendence of what's beyond the gunas. So there is a thirst for more in the depths of our being connected to the sacred, to the spiritual, to the divine. Again, some people may agree with that, but they may be more reticent about embracing all that in the context of a particular religious institution or whatever. And I can totally understand that, I can tell you that. And many times in that case, what we need to do is not so much, okay, let's make God disappear so people is not triggered, but let's try to rediscover and redefine the divine in ways that are utterly coherent, utterly healing, that make complete sense and go even beyond our common sense, that satisfy our common sense and take our common sense to another level, so to say. So I think that's more important than just let's not talk about God, let's erase the spirit from the narrative, and let's just keep it sattvic. Again, in some cases we can all we may just talk about sattvic level stuff. It's fine. I'm not saying you have to just always speak about God in every single conversation you're having. But at the same time, yeah, we shouldn't, I wouldn't say we should be afraid of talking about Krishna, the divine, but we should be careful about doing that from a place that is not trauma-inducing. And it's not only, again, how we talk about it, but how we walk our talk, because every talk is accompanied by a walk, so to say, right? So every prachar is accompanied by an achar. In one sense, ideally, your prachar should come from your achar. What you say should come as a result of how you're living your life. And then, after saying what you said, continue living your life to further support what you just said. Right? So, give further support to whatever you say, give total support to that with how we act before you open your mouth and after you open your mouth. So for me, that's one of the main challenges, especially in the times we are living nowadays, where yeah, many people is rightfully, understandably so, triggered by the word God, the word religion, And as I say many times, in some cases we may need even to replace the word, which doesn't mean to replace the person or to replace the reality. But if I know that generationally the word God has more cons than pros, let's put it that way, or in any given audience I'm facing, okay, I can stop using the word. That doesn't mean I'm stop talking about the divine. I may say the divine is with absolute, the sacred, developed mystery. I know who I'm talking about in the core of my being. I may not need to say Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Sri Sri, Radha Shyama Sundar, Sriman Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Dev. I mean, I can say all that to me if I feel so, but I don't have to throw all that on top of my audience if they cannot process that. So that's part of the sensitivity of someone who is sharing, and that's a symptom of advancement as well, right? How in tune you are with the environment you are addressing. So, but yeah, I think that it's very important that we have talked about this many times. We have so much to say about the divine. I'm talking about Gaudiya Vaishnavism now. There's so much to speak about, so many details, so much specificity. We've talked about this in radical personalism. Now we can really get lost in all that, but not lost and found, lost and lost. And we can just resort to the specificity, the esoteric specificity of our tradition. We can resort to that as an a perfect avoidance, not having to walk our talk. I'm not saying everyone is doing that, of course, but there is a possibility of doing that when you have a very refined theology, where you can spend so much time entering into so many details. And if you have charisma, if you have knowledge, on top of that, you can speak in ways that are very impressive. And many people, most people, I will say, will equate that with spiritual advancement, which is not the case. That you have knowledge, charisma, doesn't mean you are advanced. Doesn't mean you're closer to God, you are pure, you are understanding what you are talking about, you are applying those things, you are having corresponding insights. No, it may be just that you sing nicely, nice beard, nice turban, good Sanskrit pronunciation, good storytelling. No, I'm not against any of those things. I'm just saying none of those things are a warranty that you have your heart in the right place, so to say. If you have the right heart in the right place and all the other stuff, that's great. Beautiful turban, beautiful beard, everything becomes more charming by having the heart in the right place. Because if not, we are resorting to all this array of stuff just so we don't have to do work to have the heart in the right place. So, and that's invisible, right? That's many times nobody sees that. How we are feeling, thinking, behaving when nobody else is watching. So that's where the truth lies, basically. Not in front of the big audience, not in the front of the Zoom call, in one sense that you can have people, oh yeah, ki jai, blah blah blah, great. But what's going on when nobody's watching? And there's always someone watching, of course, on top of that. When we are being seen, how we are dealing with that, how we allow ourselves to be seen. So I think it's important many times to, and I'm saying that to myself, to be honest, because I have intellectual appetite, considerable one. So I could go forever just exploring and being fascinated with all the intricacies of our theology, and I've done so that a lot. There has been some excess for sure, and I will say that at some part of my journey, I felt the need of stop all that for a moment and just go to the basics and go deeper into those basics. And I'm not saying this to say, so therefore now I'm showing you the example of how to do it. I'm probably still failing in so many ways. And again, I'm saying all this to normalize these stages of the journey, right? At some point, there may be that fascination and you want to know it all, to memorize all the verses, to read all the books, to have all the details. And at one point, you realize, oh, at least in my case, oh, behind all that, there was still some scaping. There was still some unresolved even childhood trauma. No? So then you go to something more foundational, from childhood trauma to the to Radharani Bina's name, the name of Radharani's Bina. And you can just spend too much time learning all the varieties of Binas that she has, and all the varieties of flute that Krishna has, and the sizes, and one is made of diamonds and bamboo and different names. And you need to heal your childhood traumas, because somehow they're getting in the way of your approach to transcendence. At least I'm talking for me. It's not that we need to be 108% healed of every single thing before we dare to say Hare Krishna or open a book. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, let's try to be as honest, as balanced as we can with our own case. I'm just sharing some personal testimony, but you have to see which is your own. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's not so much about being too religious or performing or being impeccable in what you say, how you say it, memorizing this, knowing what to say there. Because we can all learn the script. It's not that difficult. I mean, we can all learn the religious script of being a good boy, a good girl, in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, in Christianity, whatever tradition. You will be given the handbook, the good boy, good girl religious handbook, the do's and don'ts, so nobody complains about you, so you can convince yourself you're being admitted to heaven because you are checking all the boxes. It doesn't take much time to learn that. It's short, it's boring. No, I mean, it has some purpose. Again, we need some in the beginning. Okay, give me the handbook. What to do, what not to do. Okay, here you have the handbook. The problem is when you then take that and think, this is all I have to do. That's it. And I'm doing it, so therefore I can do anything else because I'm doing it. That's when the distortion starts to come, right? I'm checking all the boxes from the handbook, so I'm saved, I'm perfect, I'm correct. So I can, no matter what I do during the rest of my day, this handbook is perfectly checked. So that's it. So that's how sometimes we may convince ourselves. And you see this kind of, no, this dysfunction, no, this bipolar thing. Like on one side, very externally, good boy, good girl, religious level, and on the other side, you need to be admitted into a madhouse, religious madhouse, religious PTSD for you and for the ones around you. And I'm not criticizing, I'm not like stigmatizing those who may be there or are there, just to understand the situation. So, yeah, we need the integration. That's why we need to, in my opinion, I feel it's very healing and healthy and sustainable to. And I was reading today something from Srila Siddhar Maharaj. He was referring to Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur on this idea, no, like this is a descending process. So if you are doing your part, and again, doing your part is not just checking the boxes externally, your part internally with introspection, with sincerity, with openness, you will be promoted by force to the next chapter of the journey, to the next level, if you want to use that word. It will be irresistible. You will be drawn there. You don't need to be like too concerned about, but how do I get to that level, and when will that happen, and what do. If you're minding your own business, so to say, you will find yourself smoothly navigating the journey with all these ups and downs, of course, also, but because it's not that you can just force the higher level to descend to you. You have to open yourself to grace, do your part with as much honesty as sincerity, and then witness the miracle, so to say. Rather than, again, checking religious boxes, being perfect, earning salvation, deserving, impressing, masking. That's exhausting. That's boring. And that's not the essence of the path, right? So yeah, at the end of the day, it's all about what's going on inside of us on a daily basis, on any normal circumstance. How do we behave in the Vyasasan, outside of the Vyasasan? It shouldn't make a difference. No, we shouldn't notice a difference. Oh, when he sat in the Vyasasan, wow, that was something happened. But I'm more interested in what happened when that person went down from the Piazzas. How much you're able to carry the momentum of whatever happened on top of there, so to say, right? Or how you are carrying, in other words, what you are gathering from your day-to-day life into the Piazzas, and no, that's put in from another place. How you treat each other, how we relate to each other, how you communicate with each other, how judgmental we may still be, how many biases are still filtering how we see other people, ourselves, to begin with. So yeah, some ground work at home to begin with. I think that's very important. I don't know if I'm addressing your question, Vincent, or something else that you feel needs to be said. Please let us know.
You said a lot of things, but maybe to I think the for me what I heard was we need God for God consciousness, and but we don't need the word God or all the externals.
Yeah, and again, some people may be really connected with God, but they may not be using that word.
Yeah.
And they may not be even like resorting to the framing we resort to when speaking about God, but they are actually relating to that same reality. But they may call it whatever, the Great Spirit, or you name it. And of course, again, they are different expressions of God, of the divine, they're endless. And some of them may not be our cup of tea, but that doesn't mean that we should put them down and say they are not connected as I am. At the end of the day, again, it's all about the sincerity of your approach. So yeah, we shouldn't judge by externals. I mean, that you use the word God doesn't necessarily mean that God is in the equation. Sometimes many people use the word God a lot to somehow make up for the lack of God in their inner being. Sometimes I remember talking with people that are like, oh, you talked for the last 15 minutes and you never say Krishna, or you never say Prabhupada after two sentences. And that point is like, why do I need to do so? To prove my loyalty. It's not about proving external loyalty, it's what's going on inside my heart. So if those personalities are present in my heart, I may not mention their name over and over again, but that doesn't mean I'm not talking about them all the time. But again, in the beginning, some people will judge reality by externals. It's part of the deal of reality. Some people will just look at how you dress, which words you say, how you do the external ritual, how you do the mudra, what's your pronunciation, and that determines everything for them. And if we understand from which place they are coming, we should see that with understanding and compassion, without superiority complex, understanding we probably have been there as well. And by grace, we are able to understand that that's not what actual life and spirituality is about. And all of those things are there to facilitate an inner experience. Again, it's connectedness, it's not correctedness. It's not about information, it's transformation. Again, it's not performance, it's transformance. But not everyone is ready for that. So we cannot just impose that to those who need something more primitive, so to say. That's how much they can deal with that. It's fine. And there are so many levels in all this. I mean, it's not just one, two, three levels. It's endless. So at the end of the day, we have to take care of our own backyard, so to say, and assist others, yeah, in a humble way. And yeah, personally, I've had lots of experience with people who may not use the word God, or will not use the word Krishna, or are not Gaudiya Vaishnav, so they do not share the same theological framework that I do, but still, we can really feel we are talking about the same thing here so much, even if we may have differences. And many times the experience is we are so much on the same page with this other person And I'm so much on the same page, more than with other Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Many times it's not just using the same words, sharing the same language, but sharing the same heart, sharing the same spirit. If the heart is in this same place, so to say, right place, you will be closer to each other. And if you the heart is in the two different place, but you use the same words, it still is like talking Chinese to each other. So, yeah, I think I shared that. I remember talking a few weeks ago with a friend of mine, Rabbi Nahum Wartlev. And we were talking. We feel each other very close to each other. He's a Jewish rabbi. I'm a Gaudiya Vaishnav Swami, and that's only a designation, of course, at one point. So, and we were talking how both of us feel, quoting Richard Rohr, inhabiting the edge of the insight of our tradition. Now, like if the tradition is a circle, we are not so much right in the center, like totally insular and insiders, but more on the edge of the insight. Still on the insight, but on the edge, not about to leave the tradition, just far enough from the center so we do not become like totally insular and close enough to the edge so we remain in dialogue with what's going on outside of that particular circle. And he will say, yeah, I think both of us, he told me, inhabit that same place, even though we are connected to different traditions, but we're inhabiting the same place in connection to those traditions. So that makes us closer to each other than us connected to people from our own tradition, but one is totally insular and the other one is on the edge of the insight. Right? So that's another way of speaking with what we are sharing now. No? And you can find this kinship and fellowship everywhere. And you can find a lack of that everywhere, including your own tradition. Yeah. Many times, especially in your own tradition, as I remember, we shared this fun word some months ago, this idea of Sigmund Freud, like the narcissism of the slight difference, right? Because he will say that sometimes if we have difference with people from other groups, they don't impact that hard. But when we have a difference with the people from our own tradition, even if it's the slightest difference, that becomes like a big issue. So yeah, lots of invitations to continue to tidy home, put our own room in order. So yeah, don't let the word God mislead you. No? If someone is mentioning it, doesn't mean they're actually talking about God. If someone is not mentioning it, doesn't mean they're not talking about that. No, pay attention to the spirit behind the words, to the presence behind the words, to the action before and after the words, to what's going on in between the words. And if we are honest and sincere, we will get some honest assessment of what's actually taking place. And it doesn't matter. They say God, Krishna, Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada, not none of that, all of that, some of that. That's not the warranty of anything. And that's how Krishna looks at reality. And the Bhagavatam says, we should look at reality with the same eyes that God looks at reality. Not that we can be God, but just try to get as close as you can to how the divine glances at everything. And how he glances at everything, Bhava Grahi Janardana. He's only seeing the essence of things. No? He's not distracted or by externals, but performance, by masks, by words. He's going to the right to the heart of the issue, which in one sense is like, oh, thank God, he's not caring for all the potential ritual imperfection and technical shortcomings. Yeah, great, but he's going right to the heart of the issue. So what's going on at the right at the heart of the issue? And that invites us not to be neurotic about it, but to be honest about it and to do that inspection, self-inspection. So if Krishna is Bhavagrahi, that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we should become Saragrahi, which is another way of saying Bhavagrahi. So Krishna is Saragrahi, and therefore you are invited to be Saragrahi, because Krishna sees everything according to the essence of things, and we are invited to see things according to how the divine is seeing things. How we are being seen by Krishna in an essential way We are invited to return that same glance to everything, as substantial as possible. That's not easy task. That's a life task, a lifetime's task. And that's what sadhana is about. Training that eye, developing that vision to relate to everything from a perspective of essentialism, not formality. Tulasi Marsh will speak so many times about that. Principles and details, essence and form, this ongoing discernment between the two. That's what characterizes a neophyte from someone more progressive. And again, we all may begin as neophytes in this lifetime or previous one, but we are at some point invited to move forward to the next stage, which is something more nuanced and more discerning. Okay, a few words. I hope that helps. Thank you for the question, an important one. Because it's an important one, we'll invite you to participate for a few moments in our Zoom breakout rooms, where we'll be churning together, sharing, further exploring what we have just shared in community, in intimate setting with three, four of us. And we'll be seeing each other in a few minutes back. So good luck there. Have fun. See you soon. Welcome back. Welcome, welcome. Well, I hope you have some good time together. Wonderful, awesome, and awful, not only some. And we'll continue with the remaining raised hands digitally. So far, we have two more. So if you have anything else, feel free to do so. But so far, we'll continue with the next one, which comes from Badra from New Zealand, following the original order, and then Rasangi from California. Welcome, Badra.
Hare Krishna Maharaj and everybody. Lovely to be here with you all again. The other week, a very dear friend of mine, Shripad Chidandi Maharaj, left this world. And I just want to talk a little bit about my feelings around that. I was sitting by the beach with my japamala looking out over the ocean when a devotee called and told me the news. And I felt my initial feeling was shock and sadness. And it was interesting because I was looking out at the waves, and the waves were one after another coming in and crashing. And it just gave me like a sort of a mystic feeling of birth and death and birth and death, and one wave after another after another. And also like the feeling of like the ocean of material existence was there too in my feeling. And I actually got a bit choked up for a minute or two. I couldn't even speak to my friend on the phone clearly. I definitely felt something in my being at the news that Chidandi Maharaj had passed away. And I have felt sad for several days afterwards. It's not as though I was crippled with sadness or anything like that. It wasn't like I was heartbroken and couldn't function or anything like that. But I felt this air of sadness in my mind whenever I remembered that this person, who was a good friend and who has helped me spiritually on many occasions, has gone. It's kind of bewildering that, in one sense, this dynamic person is right here giving these amazing, powerful talks on YouTube every day, and now suddenly he's just not there, at least according to my perception. And so then he has had so much impact on many devotees, and some devotees organized. That many devotees could give testimony, anyone who wanted to give their eulogies of Shripad Chidandi Maharaj. And I was invited to do that. And when I spoke, I talked about my relationship with him and my experiences with him and his japa retreats and everything like that. And at the end of my talk, I got a bit emotional, and I expressed how it was a loss to me that he's gone, and so then I noticed just over the last couple of days I've been watching these videos. There's dozens and dozens, maybe even hundreds of them on YouTube now, of devotees expressing their appreciations of Shripad Ji Dandi Maharaj, and many of them, and they're all good. I'm not making this wrong at all, but I noticed that many of them, they're saying the theme was Maharaj's life was glorious, his death was glorious, his future's glorious. Go Premanande, Hari Hari Bol, you know. And very few of them actually expressed any kind of loss. And I mean, I can relate to that. His life was glorious, and I'm quite sure that he's gone to a very good place where he will his bhakti will be greatly enhanced, move forward. But at the same time, we had, isn't there a place for human feelings that this person, I won't be able to connect with him or exchange with him any further or in this lifetime now, apart from the legacy he's left, of course, which is great. But just the person himself, there's nothing like actually having the person themselves in their living form in your presence. And that's gone now. So, and I mean, I've felt this a number of times when Vaishnav friends have passed away, but this was particularly strong because I'd done three japa retreats with Tridandi Maharaj, and each of them were just very powerful, powerful connections with the holy name, which I would not have experienced if he hadn't organized those japa retreats. And so yes, I just wanted to get your comment, Maharaj, on the two views. There's one view that the Vaishnav's life is glorious, their death is glorious, and there's almost like there's no need to grieve, you know. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. And at the same time, I feel there's a place for human feelings that he's gone. A person that you love or appreciate is no longer in our presence. So would you please comment on this?
Thank you. I'll Sripad Tridandi Maharaj ki jai. And of course, I didn't have the time that probably you had to share with him, but I had the fortune of meeting him a few times. Some of you may know I also wrote a few words that I shared on the day of his passing. And actually, you sent me the message, Badra, to let me know about his passing. And then I came to know about it from many others. So, and I agree, he was a very special soul, very loving, very. Again, I won't make my eulogy here now. I already did. So, regarding your question, to the point of your question on different people reacting in different ways. Yeah, I wouldn't say again, I wouldn't reply in any dualistic way, right? I wouldn't say these were correct and the other ones were wrong, right? Each one, I will trust that each one behaved as sincerely as they could from where they were in that moment, you know? Especially moments like that, I will say generally when, I mean, of course, you can always make your way into cheating in every life circumstance. But when someone kind of dies, if we leaves their body, generally the moment of passing brings some level of sobriety, so to say, even for those who live their daily life in a very escapist way. So I will say that generally, at least, in a moment like that, those who choose to express themselves will do so from a place of, in general, from considerable transparency and honesty. But again, each one will be in a different place in their life. So not necessarily everyone will be expressing, okay, everything is great, Kijai, no sadness, no loss, soul is eternal, no need to lament. And the other ones are crying and feeling genuine loss. And again, there are not only these two options, I would say, even, right? because there are levels and forms of feeling the loss and crying from a human place, from another different place. And we have seen all this in our tradition. I don't know, you can have Bhakti Thakur saying, okay, a Vaishnava dies to live, right? And there's a whole song he wrote about it, right? So it could feel, again, it's all how we interpret that. But one could feel, oh, that song is there for us not to lament and to show us that there's no actual dying, and that not only the soul is eternal, but someone who lived their lives in a glorious way. Again, future is brilliant. They died to live, and now they're even more alive than ever. So they have all reasons to celebrate. We could take all that, and there is a place for that. There's a place to bring the beautiful, positive, eternal prospect of that soul in their journey to Bhakti. We don't want, I would say, we don't want to lose balance. No, we don't want to lose sight of, how to say, if I'm feeling some sadness or loss, which I'm not saying is bad, we should not be drowned in that to the point that we are losing sight of how brilliant is the prospect of that soul that continues their journey. But also in the context of praising the auspiciousness of how that person lived their lives, we should not do so to the point of canceling or denying what we may need to feel, so to say. But I'm not saying everyone is in that balance, because everyone is in their own particular situation. But I don't know if you, I don't know, we have these songs in our songbook, like Jianilu Prima Dhana from Sri Narottam Das Thakur. No, it's a very well-known song, right? Jianilu Prima Dhana Karuna Pratur. You know that one, right? Henu Prabhu Kota Gila Acharya Thakur. So the whole song is basically Narottam Das Thakur weeping and lamenting, not only from someone who has passed a few days ago, but from all the associates of Mahaprabhu that have passed before he was born, right? Because he was born right after, one generation after Mahaprabhu and his associates. So we could say his birth on earth was marked by separation from day one. Now imagine you are born one generation after Mahaprabhu and all his associates. I'm not saying that's bad, that's wrong. It's what it is, and it created its own unique flavor to Narottam Das Thakur. So he's writing this song, he's crying and lamenting, and the whole song is just enumerating one name after another, the six Goswamis and Advaitacharya, Mahaprabhu, and this and that, and crying for each of them. Lamenting because they have passed and I'm still here, left alone, deprived of your association. Again, he didn't witness their passing. He was born one generation after, and still he's crying for their loss. Now, just to give you an quote unquote extreme example of how much you can feel the loss or cry for those who are no longer among us, at least in 3D. So there's place for that. No, I'm saying, making that point. Of course, we are not Narottam Das Thakur. Also, we cannot just like imitate that, as you properly say. I will say it's part of a human being properly human. I wouldn't say even being. Today I was reading something, because sometimes we use the expression, okay, be fully human and fully divine. And sometimes the word fully may create some pressure, right? Fully. You have to be fully. You cannot be less than fully. And of course, fully means as fully as you can now. And maybe if the word fully doesn't work, maybe you can use the word truly, right? Like be truly human. Whatever means truly human. Yeah, Tribhuvan Krishna is sharing what Narottam Das Thakur is saying. I will smash my head, sorry, against the rock in separation of these Vaishnavas. And who knows? Probably he literally did that. He didn't just write that to sound fancy in a song, right? He was not someone to do that. But are we called to do that? Can we do that? If we really feel that extreme feeling for someone, that may happen, and it may, and that won't be dysfunctional. But we have to find a functional way to express ourselves in at any moment, right? Not only when someone is passing. At every moment we can be dysfunctional in how we feel for others, and we can be functional in how we feel for others. But yeah, I agree that the moment of passing is a very threshold moment to see where we are in relationship to the person, where we are in relation to ourselves and to what we feel, to our own emotions. But as I told you, again, I can understand how I've seen that, and I related to that. Again, I don't want to make this whole thing again back to personal autobiography of Padmanabh Swami. But I've witnessed people passing in my life, whether biological family, my father, my grandparents, all of them, and some other people. And I've witnessed Vaishnavas from the Vaishnav community close to me passing as well. Many of them, in fact, in Argentina, we had a triple loss. One, the tragedy that happened like 15 years ago, who were three Vaishnavis very close to our community. I mean, in our community, living in the ashram. And they died from a gas leaking. So they went to sleep and they never woke up. But they were inside the room for 3 days and they were already dead by day one, but we didn't know. And for 3, 4 days, we didn't know where they were, what was going on with them, till police had to tear down the door and find them there, right? So that was tragic, I can tell you. I mean, we were crying. I mean, we were dying before we knew what was going on because the uncertainty was to such a degree. In one sense, when we knew their past, it was a relief in the sense to know what actually happened. But that brought its own wave of pain and loss, which lasted for time. And it's okay. Again, for me, I will personally, and I don't want to sound like making this a universal statement or mandate. And as we were talking the other day, it's not like, okay, now Maharaj will say how guys in Tathagata Sangha are supposed to do stuff. Right? No. But I will agree in general that, in general, not only in Gaudiya Vaishnava community, and last night I was talking with someone about this, but in general, religious circles, many times we are not so much, in Francis Weller's words, we need to get an apprenticeship with grief. No, we don't do well with grief. Generally, as humans, we don't do well with closings. I remember even when I was last year doing, it was not any, nobody passed, but I was doing a coaching workshop training for 6 months. So we're on the last class. So closing, right? And yeah, and I remember, I'm still struck by that simple sentence that our teachers say, well, we humans are not good with closings. No? So he said, because we are arriving today, last class, we are closing. And she emphasized, and we need to do a closing because we are not good with closings. So we need to do it. Now, closing doesn't mean I forget you forever and this stopped existing, but it's closing to open a new chapter, a next chapter. So many times, and grieving has to do with that. You know, someone passed, I will say in general, yeah, it's healthy to feel the loss, to cry, to express yourself. It's a confirmation that you love the person. Not necessarily that means that you're attached or that you are like, whatever. That's a symptom of your fallenness. That's a symptom that you have genuine feeling for a genuine person. So that's helping you to further internalize the person's presence in their physical absence, no? In a more deep level inside of you. You can continue related to that person even if the person is not physically present. No, I felt something like that when my dad passed like 7 years ago. I mean, he's no longer here physically, but somehow by Krishna's grace, I allowed myself to go through the grieving process and to cry and to feel all the things that I needed to feel. And of course, lots of positive things came as well. And he feels very present in my life. It's not that I'm talking to him like on a daily basis and we are having back and forth, so to say, but you can feel the presence of that person, like a proper integration. A proper layer of integration in that particular relationship. But many times we need grieving for that to happen. Because if not, there's some disjointed layer there that is not fully integrated. So again, grieving, there's an unnecessary grieving. Of course, we don't want just to grieve. That's the type of grieving that Krishna kind of condemns in the Gita, because we have to be careful again not to cherry pick scripture and just bring a verse to apply that on an absolute level to every time, place, and circumstance. He's talking about the unnecessary grief that could be avoided and that you could actually avoid, but you are choosing not to do so. And that part of the grieving comes because you are also bypassing yourself. So come on, there's something else you can do. But when the time is for, I mean, when, as I many times said, he said what he said to Arjuna again in a certain context. Then after the Kurukshetra war, with almost everyone died, Krishna was crying like crazy. That's described in the Mahabharata. He was grieving everyone's passing. It's not that he was like, oh, I told Arjuna not to lament, so I shouldn't lament, and I had to repress my. He was giving way to his. And we were talking about God here, right? In this case, we cannot say, well, but he was God. We are not God, right? Okay, he was God. He could express his emotions. We are not God. We shouldn't. On the contrary. So, but again, I'm not saying by this, I don't mean to say. Therefore, those who do not grieve the passing of Tridandi Maharaj are wrong. They are not properly situated. Each one is trying their best in their own situation. So, as I say before, I lost my track for a moment. When some Vaishnavas in our tradition, in the mission I was affiliated 25 years ago, they passed. And the mission was big. So, big mission means many people passing, more than when you have a smaller mission. Sometimes you know and you knew some of them, sometimes you didn't much. And many times, I agree, many times it was presented in a very, what now I will see, like a little bit like simplistic way. Like that person passed and is already in Golok Vrindavan. So, Ki Jai, next topic. And it was enough for me at the time, to be honest. It was enough. Now it's not enough, and probably now I'm not convinced that that person went directly to Golok Vrindavan either. Which I'm not saying the person is not on their way there, but for me, now I look back and it sounded like a fairy, simplistic fairy tale. Like, okay, death, Golok Vrindavan, let's not think about that anymore. Let's move forward, guys. That's a lot of things to do. And when you die, you will be transported automatically over there also. And when we approach death like that, we may live our life like that. We may live like, okay, I don't know where I am, but I know that when I die, I will be automatically transported, because that's what say that everyone that happens to everyone when they die. And that's life is way more nuanced than that. But again, for some time it worked, and for some time it had a purpose, no? And eventually you realize, no, there is more to this. Not only in terms of the journey of each soul and who we are to say where each soul went, they are in Golok Vrindavan, in Gokul, in on earth where Krishna is performing their Leela. I mean, we don't even need to go there. If the person had led a very favorable, beautiful life, that's it. That's it. And even if that's not the case, still there's always room for hope, right? but I will say in terms of how we deal with the situation, yeah. At some point, I think there's place to express a lot our feelings. And again, we are talking about us, but then let's take that to Narottam Das Thakur. Let's take that. I've heard stories about, I don't know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Prabhupada and many other great personalities crying genuinely, not only with someone passed. Sometimes, I don't know, I remember once Srila Siddhar Maharaj was asking about a certain Prabhupada disciple that went to visit him. And Srila Siddhar Maharaj has gained some affection for him, and he was trying to accompany his process. And he had some problems, and he had somehow like distanced himself from the practice. And there were some group of devotees from a particular institution that, because this devotee had gone to Srila Siddhar Maharaj, they didn't like this devotee anymore, so they wanted him to fall down. So when they knew that he fell down, whatever that means, they were organizing a celebration. Imagine that. So there was another devotee who knew about this celebration, And who knew Srila Siddharmaraj? So he went to Srila Siddharmaraj and he witnessed how Srila Siddharmaraj reacted when he knew that this devotee got distance, and Srila Siddharmaraj started to cry basically. Now, so this other devotee put the two things in the contrast, right? Here we have this compassionate elder genuinely crying tears of love for a lost soul for a moment at least. And here we have these other people organizing a party to celebrate. No? So that gave a very clear spectrum there. So we have space for lamentation, for loss, for grieving. If it's come from a genuine place, not only is not bad, it's good and necessary to become truly human, to integrate all these layers of complexity and emotional expression that we need as humans. And we need as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, because ultimately we want to enter into a fully emotional realm when there will be also loss and grief and lamentation in the context of the Leela, different setting, but still these emotions are there in their pristine, original, deeper expression. But if you cannot relate at all with them, even in their, if you want to call it partial expression here, you won't know how to deal with them in their most powerful expression. So we better get acquainted here with all our emotional landscape and gradually learn to express and integrate each of these emotions with the sweet absolute in the center. And that will make us as closer as we can from what we'll be experiencing in eternity. So I don't know if that helped, Padre.
That was a brilliant answer. Thank you, Maharaj. Very helpful. Very clear.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and again, I'm sorry if I repeat myself, but let's keep it always compassionate and understanding, right? Not now to go back. And if you hear someone saying, "Oh, he passed Maharaj, and his life was great, and he's now with Krishna, go Haribo," and we're like, such a neophyte, such an unnuanced, raw human being. You have so much to learn. And now we are becoming perpetrators of abuse and mistreatment, and we are judging everyone. So we are not being part of the solution anymore at that moment, right? So it's tricky, right? Again, if we have some deeper, broader glimpse that clicks for us, makes sense, we should embrace that in a way that integrates the previous sedimentary layers. Not rejecting all that and labeling all of that, because we were there. So if you stigmatize that, it's a way of stigmatizing yourself. Still, there is some type of toxic shame trip going on there unconsciously. There's still a lack of acceptance of what you went through to be where you are now. Because if you are where you are now, appreciating whatever bigger picture, you had to go through this smaller frame before, and thanks to that, you are here. So we should be grateful for that. As suffocating as that feels, that will feel for us to go back there. But for some other people, that's they find enough spaciousness there. Yet, still. At some point, that stir them may start to feel smaller. But for some time, they may be okay. And we should be very careful not try to. Hey guys, that's too small. Here there is quite spacious. Come over here with us. We are the broad-minded guys, tribe. No, that's delicate, no? So yeah, we have to honor, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, right? To acknowledge each one's adhikar is true beauty, true virtue. To know. And generally, we tend to read that verse to acknowledge where you are, where is your adhikar, where you are, sincerely, to assess your current situation is virtuous, yes, but also to acknowledge where everyone else is and relate to them accordingly is true virtue. Because I can assess myself, okay, I'm here, but then you look at everyone else expecting all of them to be where you are. And that's not in line with the spirit of that verse. So yeah, honoring, trying to take the time to as much as we can, to get a glimpse of where everyone is and try to relate to each other, honoring and respecting that with proper boundaries, honoring what we need, but honoring what they need, creating the space for that. That's an art. Like any art, any art form takes time, right? You don't become a Michelangelo in a weekend. You don't become a Van Gogh in a lifetime even. So it may take time to perfect your craft. So it's the art of how to relate to everyone. That takes time. It's hard work, but it's beautiful and it's necessary. And there's no other way. There's no way of bypassing that. So yeah. Okay, one more breakout room before we go to Rasangi's, I will say, last sharing of today. So let's go to the breakout room for a few moments. And those of you who, for whatever reason, cannot go to the breakout rooms, breakthrough rooms, spend a few minutes trying to own what we just shared, how this resonates with you, what's telling to you, what's inviting you to embrace. A few moments of reflection and see you back in a few minutes. Welcome. Welcome, welcome back, you all. Nice to see your faces after the breakout room. So we'll conclude our gathering today with one more sharing, question, inquiry, comment, appreciation. What we'll see from our dear Rasangi from California, US. Welcome, Rasangi Ji.
Jai Maharaj, first I wanted to give you some appreciation. And because it impacted me so deeply. Your podcast with Rosemary the Poetess.
I didn't know there was a word called a poetess, but I like it.
Poetess.
It's
Isn't
good.
that right?
No, it's
Poetess.
fine. It's perfectly fine with me.
Well, if you can make up words, I can too.
Of course. That's why I say it's
Okay.
perfectly fine with me. Let's keep
Okay.
making up words.
And Maharaj, that's one of the things that I found so charming in this podcast. Your degree of simpatico, and that's a Spanish word, the simpatico between
Yeah.
you two was so beautiful. It was like palpable. Oh, it was so beautiful. I was very deeply felt.
Thank you.
And the fact that she's a wordsmith too, this is like you got carried away on your own thread there for a while. You might have lost some of us, but you were in your own little world of creating beautiful words. But what I really loved about it, Maharaj, was how you dealt with the sensitivity of her tremendous loss. Inconceivable. We're talking about loss and grief. And yet you masterfully managed that or facilitated her being able to express and feel her feelings and share what she shared. And then you brought in Krishna and the gopis in the 10th canto. I mean, that was just saying, you know what I mean? It was just beautiful. And how Krishna wanted the rawness of the little gopis and to come as they were. And then how he disappears sometimes from the other gopis and then reappears, and how nothing is linear, love is not linear. Anyway, you made so many amazing points in this talk. I will listen to it again. I just really value that one so much.
Thank you.
And then I have a question for you, because from our EDL reading group, you know, we were reading on the verb Krishna, God is a verb, and I think we were all a little gobsmacked, and I think it fits in with what was already talked about earlier by Vincent, but it just takes it a little further, and I just wanted to put it out to you. Maybe there's something more to be said, because this is so revolutionary and
Okay.
different. Yeah. So it says, you're talking about as they approach me, I reciprocate accordingly. And then you say that it doesn't mean merely that the divine gives rewards tailored to the devotee. It means that he becomes something he was not. Inform mood identity to match the unique flavor of each soul's love. While many traditions affirm that we're created in God's image, we find something even more intimate. God is created in love's image. His unlimited, uniquely reciprocal forms are sculpted out of the unique love pouring from each heart.
Yeah, someone started kirtan in the background to celebrate that.
Mean, you already mentioned earlier, you don't have to say that one. When he entered the arena, there were 10 different ways of loving Krishna. You said that earlier, but
More
that
than
is
10.
so, oh yeah, more than that. That's so profound. And what I just want to say, what I got out of it when I read it, Maharaj, is that nobody can tell us how to love God. It has to come from us. It has to come from within me. It's a personal thing. Personal.
Yeah.
And although we can take guidance and we can clean up our act, we can clean up and pull the weeds, ultimately it comes.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing, Rasangit. So, yeah, what to say to that? Your tears are speaking by themselves. But yeah, we guidance is important. We are not here to downplay guidance and role models and inspiration and mirrors of potential. But yeah, at the end of the day, we have to establish our relationship, not only with the divine, but with everything, right? So it's radically personal. And Krishna responds, Bhagavan responds, Bhagavati responds in utterly personal ways. I mean, it's common sense in one sense, right? Like, even if we think about our own relationships, I don't know, when you had your grandchildren, you became something you were not before having your grandchildren. You became a grandma. And not only a title, but in you saw yourself, well, you have your children before having children at all. Oh, this mother dimension is emerging. I didn't know it was there, and I'm discovering myself through discovering this person. So it happens all the time. But it's very funny how, when we think about the infinite, unlimited God, we generally don't think that he could do, or she, or they could do that. We are very accustomed to that happening on a daily basis among us, but we somehow have unconsciously imposed so many limits on the unlimited. So we need to, yeah, unlearn a lot. That may be the main part of our learning process, is not just to accumulate new concepts, new ideas, but dismantle all ones that need to be dismantled to allow for the real thing to emerge. So yeah, Sweet Absolute is utterly reciprocal. He's made in love's image, to say it poetically. So I appreciate you started with Rosemary, a poet. We need to use poet at one point, right? There's no other resource, no other language, because God responds to love, to each heart, unique heart. So that will make the divine adopt a particular disposition and approach, and like we do in every relationship again. So it's good that we can start with our point of reference here as humans, not to say God is limited to that, but to say there are enough clues in healthy human interactions for us to get a glimpse into what's going on in eternity. But first, we need healthy human interactions. Because many times, by not having healthy human interaction, we end up having a traumatizing or traumatized idea of God. Because we cannot but project on the basis of what we know, we have experienced. So if we have not experienced the divine, whatever we experience in relationship here, we filter who God is according to that. So going back to the previous answer in the beginning, right? We need to work on our humanity. As I say in radical personalism, our humanity will put our spirituality in context. And the role of a spirituality is to contextualize our humanity. Both will contextualize each other, not to compromise each other, not to eliminate each other, not to compete with each other. So the more we have a realistic experience and notion of the relationship we are having right now, we can have a very coherent picture in our tradition of how Naralila, Krishna's Naralila, and Gaur Mahaprabhu's Naralila look like. So, yeah. But yeah, it's moving, as you showed yourself, to play out the implications of what it means is very moving. And that's the idea, right? That these ideas are not merely ideas, but there are things that put it on the edge of our seat, and we start to be moved. Because that's the nature of reality, the ultimate realities. It's moving, by itself is moving. Krishna's dancing. Braja means to move, to go. So there's a movement going on, but that movement points to create a movement inside of us. As I always like to say, to be moved internally, and then whatever, however we moved externally should be the momentum of the internal movement. Now, whatever we may be doing externally in our actions, ideally, should be just the momentum of the movement I received internally. So thank you for sharing your movement with us, Rasangi. Yeah. And again, it's all a playing out of the implications of verses like the one we refer to, Bhagavad Gita 4:11, Jyatam mam prapadyante tam satyaiva bhajamyaham. According to how you approach me, I reciprocate. It's all there. I'm not selling anything new, actually. It's just playing out the implications of that line. But it's there. Right. And yeah, at the end of the day, nobody can replace us in our relationship with the sweet absolute. At the end of the day, we are invited to fully inhabit that space of relationship that can only be occupied by each of us. And there is place for each of us. There is place for each of us in the world of relationship. Not to, again, to replace each other, but to own our own bhakti project, so to say. And it's not, again, it's not just Krishna and me, rather than Krishna and me. But it's everything with everyone, no? Everything with everything. It's omni-relational. God is not only omniscient, omnipresent. God is omni-relational. And if you want to relate to an omni-relational being, you are invited to become as omni-relational as you can as well. Because according to our Sambandha in Bhakti, our conceptual orientation, everything exists in relationship. So loving something must include everything else. Loving the center in particular must include everything else that is also connected to that is also loved by that center. So, yeah. Yeah.
Maharaj, one more thing that
One more thing.
I appreciate, that repetition. Like we've that's not I haven't thought about this or we haven't heard about it, but it seems like it takes what it takes to get through, the malaise to where it really becomes a reality, becomes like something that I can accept. And accepting that it's that individual, but I don't have to be anything other than who I am, that I'm loved unconditionally, that, that to be loved and in this relationship is, I don't have to earn it. It takes time, but sometimes it the light shines and you feel something. So thank you very
Yeah.
much. Yeah.
Yeah, it takes time, but eternity is on our side, so it's fine. And again, it takes time. It's not a process of getting there finally at some point and then game over. No? Because as you say, okay, it may take time for me to accept this, but once you get to the official, if we may call that the official acceptance stage, there is no limit to how much you can accept that. I mean, you can always accept. Every time Krishna plays the flute, to give an example, the gopis are accepting Krishna deeper. It's not that they did not accept him before. They accept him as much as they could, but you can always accept a little bit more the next moment and the next moment. Because as Chaitanya Charitamrita say, right? Krishna becomes more beautiful at every moment. So every moment offers you a chance of further accepting the newly updated beauty of Krishna. You couldn't have accepted that before because that was not there. Not because you were not accepting enough. You accepted as much as you could, but the next moment is there's something else to accept on a new level. And you are ready for that. And then the next level, and you're ready for that. And that's at one point is at every step and every breath, there is a further acceptance. And that's why going to our situation, yeah, Jiva Goswami, when he's describing surrender, Sharanagati, you use the word surrender. He described these six angas, these six limbs of Sharanagati. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyati tibhishva so goptritve vananam tathatma nikshepa karpanya sadvidha Sharanagati. And he says the main one is goptritve vananam. To accept, he used the word bharana. Bharana means acceptance. So the main limb of whole surrender process is accepting goptritve, that you are being maintained by Krishna, by the divine. You are being maintained doesn't mean just your bread is provided to your table. You are being sustained in every possible way you can think of, but even beyond that. You ultimately, Krishna maintains everything through love, right? That's his most powerful gravity force. No, we are not being the world is not in orbit by the laws of gravity only. That's a technical way to speak about love, where everything is pulled to the center by the force of attraction, because it's so much attraction in the center. So accepting that we are being sustained by love, that's the center of surrender process. To enter in that space, to trust that space enough. Sometimes we may feel scared and want to run away from that space. Eventually return to that space, stay there a little bit more. Till at one point you make your home there. You don't need to leave that place of acceptance. But still you can always deepen that. That home keeps broadening and expanding, and we can always gain more acceptance. So that's a positive way of expressing acceptance, not just come on, accept, like implying you are not accepting. No? You're in denial, accept. No, there is a point where you accept so much that you can continue accepting so much more forever. You are so much trained in the muscle of acceptance that now there is no limit to how much you can host and welcome the totality of reality. Because the totality is unlimited, right? So you can always have, there's always something more to host from the infinite. Again, we are talking about here hosting the infinite. I mean, there is no limit to how much acceptance can be there. But let's take it one day at a time again, so we don't become overwhelmed by the prospect of infinite acceptance. And asking today, April 5, April 5th, for those in New Zealand, what's the acceptance I'm invited to embrace? And there's always something else that I could embrace, a new level of the same thing in a new level, in a new depth, more intimacy, more commitment, whatever. Tomorrow, another day, and so on and so forth. But yeah, I think it's a good word, you know? Acceptance, radical acceptance. It's a nice book by Tara Brach called Radical Acceptance. Very interesting. She's a Buddhist author, psychologist, right? Speaking a lot about, not with the word God, but from the Buddhist perspective on self-compassion or self-acceptance and self-love. So sometimes the whole acceptance project begins at home. Because if I reject myself, I cannot accept anything or anyone because I have not accepted myself. The one who can accept others has not been accepted to begin with. So first we have to have the vessel relatively in place so it can accept, it can hold whatever is put into the vessel. But if there's no vessel, it's totally pulverized. Oh, bring the stuff. You don't know how to host it. So anyhow, acceptance key jive. We'll be inviting you one more time to our breakout rooms to put our discussion to rest. I'm seeing that there are a few newly digital raised hands, and I will beg your pardon for today because we're already a little bit on time. So we'll invite you for our next meeting next Saturday to present whatever offerings you have. But for now, you can go for a few minutes to the breakout rooms, and see you soon for our final goodbye of today. Welcome back to you all again. Hoping you had a healthy, nourishing, private sharing. And well, we'll put our sharing to rest till next Saturday for a new satsang, or for those who are joining us on Monday for our study of the Srimad-Bhagavatam. See you on Monday, same time, different day, but same time and same link in Zoom. Thank you so much, Sriman Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanand Hari Bol, Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyai Vacha, Titanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah.